And away we go.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to start with a
lot of radical change. Yeah, everything's doing what it's supposed to do. Isn't that great? Every once in a while, things just work. Imagine that. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that being the case, why don't we go ahead, we'll get some intro music playing here. We'll go check on a very lovely lady by the name of Ann Coulter. And she will she'll tell us what we're going to do about those people who wrecked America.
That's it. It's over. Then we organize the death squads for the people who wrecked America.
You know what you call people you can't talk to? Enemies. And if we want to divide our society into armed camps of enmity, all we have to do is keep doing what we're doing.
A radical agenda. The event has turned into an opportunity for the left to push a racial and radical agenda.
Implementing their radical agenda is the only thing they care about. They're bad actors.
What they want to do here is ram their radical agenda down your throat.
These are great Americans. These are people that want to see great things for the country. You know, they try and build them like sort of a radical agenda. It's not a radical agenda. It's called the Second Amendment.
All right, onward and welcome to the Radical Agenda. It's a show about timeless ideas and news of the day, and usually whatever's on your mind. But I haven't even turned the phones on today because, you know, you guys don't call. What am I going to pay for the damn things for? Truth Out is a humorously named collection of left-wing smut that carries the words of criminals and terrorists under the guise of news. There's a fairly humorous piece I posted to Telegram recently in which they cover the collapse of the National Justice Party as if the confessed terrorist who wrote the piece could claim credit for it himself. The piece is comical for its arrogance and full of horseshit misinformation, all of which I will enjoy pointing out as I read on the air in moments. The signature left-wing move, trying to tie in every stupid fucking theme into a single post, the classic thinly veiled threats, the bold but unsupported assertions, it is the quintessential example of cartoon leftism run amok. But there's some analysis worth taking from it. Occasionally, they accidentally stumble upon something worth saying, perhaps as a consequence of devoting their entire lives to eavesdropping on people smarter than them. Also, it might go without saying, you might have heard, the Jews are at it again, folks. They never do stop. Not for long, anyway. The Jew-Muslim tit-for-tat picked up this week as Israel launched missiles into Iran, supposedly notifying the United States at the last minute. Like, hey, you know that war we've been trying to get you guys into? Yeah, it's about to start. This follows on the heels of Iran retaliating against Israel for a strike on one of its facilities in Syria by launching hundreds of drones and missiles into the Jewish state, most of which, it basically goes without saying, were intercepted by American and European militaries. Moscow has since been acting as a go-between, trying to prevent further escalation of the conflict, and the Biden administration is attempting to broker a deal between Israel and Saudi Arabia that would trade Palestinian statehood for diplomatic recognition of Israel by the Saudi government. And it's an important issue, and I feel like I should be commenting on it, but I mean, like, I'm getting to a point with the fucking Jews, it's just like, what are you going to say about them anymore, right? It's hard to come up with anything original. It's all a fucking dumb cliche. They couldn't possibly allow anything positive to happen, right? If you, like, offered them a peace plan, like, what the fuck? What? What? That's just not in their blood, and it never will be, no matter how much of it they drink from actual human beings. If there was no war, would there even be any Jews? I mean, if there were no Jews, it would be easy to imagine a world without war, but is the opposite true? Jews without war? That seems unlikely from where I sit. And so, I'll get into those pieces with you. We'll go. We'll do that right now, as a matter of fact. So the piece at Truth Out, you know, they want to get the truth out. It's in, like, none of that truth shit over here. You understand? We want to get rid of it. So we're going to hire people like Shane Burley to write at our fucking stupid-ass commie Jew nigger blog. And Shane Burley, if that name doesn't ring a bell, and it shouldn't because, you know, you don't read fucking smut like this. He's the author of Why We Fight, Essays on Fascism, Resistance, and Surviving the Apocalypse, AK Press 2021. So in other words, he's writing about why there are criminal terrorists running around the streets attacking people in broad daylight on camera and not going to prison for it. And that's a, you know, that's a signed confession by a terrorist why we fight. And so they carry that type of smut over at this website where they want to get the truth out of America. 2024 began with the declaration of failure from within the white nationalist movement. The National Justice Party is toast. Billed as a working class white political party from the people who ran the Right Stuff podcast network, the racist talk radio vehicle TDS, renamed as such after originally being called the Daily Shoah. In particular, the NJP was an intentional effort to soak up the remnants of the alt-right, who wanted to continue their public activism after most of their organizations had collapsed. The NJP positioned itself to offer what few far-right organizations were currently doing, be both politically militant and upfront, building interest around contemporary issues and using elections as a place to either potentially run candidates or push wedge issues often manipulated by white nationalists. That's the thing, you know. Yeah, that when the NJP, when they're putting together their charter, they're like, hey, guys, let's put forward issues that we've manipulated. We're going to trick those suckers into believing things. The NJP came together under the control of several different people who came to prominence from the alt-right, such as the host from the Right Stuff and Greg Conte, former collaborator with Richard Spencer's National Policy Institute. They would create NJP chapters around the country, finding issues that appealed to working-class white voters and show that they were willing to take positions the Republicans and Democrats are unwilling to, thus positioning themselves as a political vanguard, fighting for white workers. But despite becoming one of the largest post-alt-right white nationalist groups in the country after its 2020 launch, their recent collapse reveals that internal fractures are continuing to keep the modern white nationalist movement in disarray. And by the way, the title of the piece, Collapse of White Nationalist Party, offers lessons for anti-fascist strategy. Which is a fucking joke, okay? The inherent instability of white supremacist groups offers anti-fascists the tools to sow chaos within the movement. And so the first thing that I pick up from this piece, the left, whenever they talk about right-wing groups, they talk about our instability, our contradictions, our conflicts. When you know, if you know anything about these people, and if you listen to me, you fucking know these idiots. Everything they say is in conflict, right? The instability of white supremacist groups. And in the same breath, they turn around and they take credit for it like they've done this, right? They have not done this. I mean, they're a factor in the sense that, like, you know, when there's a bunch of criminals running around, you know, when the criminals have taken over the government and the government sends mobs of people out to harm you because you're trying to do the right thing. I mean, it's, you know, you're an element of that group's problems. There's no question about that. But that's not what brought down the NJP for fucking sure. Anybody who thinks that we need a bunch of masked anarchists to come and sow chaos in the alt-right or the white nationalist movement, you know, just take a break, anarchist, okay? Just sit back and enjoy the fucking show, right? Because that'll happen without your intervention, I fucking promise. The alt-right emerged in 2010 as a new form of branding for fascist politics, linking up different dissident strains into a de facto ideological coalition and moved from online to IRL, or in real life, organizing around 2015 with organizations like Identity Europa, the Proud Boys, and the Traditionalist Workers' Party, which itself had been formed earlier.
But after public blunders, such as their public violence at August 2017's Unite the Right rally, significant deplatforming from tech companies, and aggressive counter-organizing from anti-fascists, their earlier model of street activism never became a significant force for community organizing. I think what he actually means to say here is the government came in and threw everybody in prison, right? Everything was going swell, and then the cops came in and put everybody in jail, and then this Democrat power broker came in, hemmed everybody up in a lawsuit, and because we're a bunch of, you know, habitual criminals, we understood how to avoid that thing better than they did, you know? While the alt-right successfully moved Trumpism and subsequently the entire American conservative movement far to the right, the GOP still fails to be an explicitly white nationalist party and thus appears tragically moderate to these right-wing militants. Their subsequent destruction holds key lessons for anti-fascists who can exploit white nationalist vulnerabilities by understanding the problems they will face as they attempt to regroup. With the help of our fantastic national staff, we will be folding up the NJP Corporation and dissolving the party after Christmas. The NJP published on its Telegram channel on December 14th at the end of a series of public outbursts from various podcasters and party activists who were celebrities in their movement. A fracture between podcaster Mike Enoch Petovic and his various NJP colleagues and his TDS co-host Sven started to form when Sven publicly said the National Justice Party was a failing front organization for the larger TRS project. Since 2022, the TRS subscriber network, which has sustained the most popular white nationalist podcasts in the country after they were shunned by payment processors and web hosting companies, has transitioned to the NJP Supporters Network, thus uniting the party and the podcast network to become one singular organization. There would now be no division between the party and TRS. They were one body with one pathway to participation and a single financial infrastructure. Which is a huge problem, okay? Anybody who saw that happen, you know, it was obvious that that was not going to go well. Now, with the help of our fantastic national staff, that line is from Tony Hovder, okay? So these people, here's one thing that you're listening to me read something from the author of Why We Fight, Essays on Being an Antifa Criminal, or whatever the fuck his stupid faggot-ass title of his book was. Like these fucking faggots read. You know, you already know these people are fucking lying because it's on the page of Truth Out and they're talking about anti-fascism, but they're also well aware that, like, when Tony Hovder took over the fucking NJP Telegram channel and started making announcements on their behalf, that this is not a statement on behalf of the party. They know that. They conspicuously leave that out because this is, you know, convenient for their narrative. So unsurprisingly, when you go to Truth Out and you start reading things from confessed Antifa terrorists who write books about their crimes and put them on Amazon and don't go to prison for their criminal behavior, you have to learn to take these things with a grain of salt, you see. But, like, that's literally what happened, right? You basically had a podcast fan club at what they fundamentally were, the pool parties. And these things, they tried to sort of, you know, straddle this line between podcast, fan club, and political organization. And then, you know, one day they're like, okay, guys, all the TRS, all the pool parties, all the listener groups, these are all now NJP supporter groups. So now we've created a political party, and all you guys who like our podcast, you're all supporters of that party now. Pay up. And now, you know, somebody somewhere is like, you didn't really have to pay. You could have given them to whatever. Okay. Like, you just, you know, I'm not complaining about people trying to make money for fuck's sake. I'm about to quit my fucking job because I'm sick of people not paying me. Okay. It's not the fucking point. Somebody just points out that you're trying to get fucking money. They're not attacking you for pointing that out. But it was a fucking preposterous proposal, okay? You're a podcast, and then you're like, okay, guys, we're gonna call it a political party now. You guys are all supporters of the party, or we'll kick you out of the group or whatever. Well, like, obviously that didn't go over well, right? It's not an attack on them, okay? You know, I avoided saying these things for a long time. I didn't want to get into any conflicts with the NJP. I really didn't want, I still don't want to. But that was a dumb idea, right? And the consequences of it were pretty fucking predictable. This process had uneven support in the organization, they continue over here, and at the end of 2023, Sven engaged in a series of public rants, calling other figures in their organization parasites who contributed nothing, such as the National Socialist podcaster Eric Stryker. "I never needed him, and my website is worse for having him on board," said Sven. "These outbursts give a window into the key contradiction that has plagued the party since its inception. Remain racist celebrities on a podcast network or organize, one or the other. The activists wanted to have in-person rallies, flash mobs, and political events, usually highlighting incidents of what they considered black-on-white crime or draw attention to white working class areas hit with disasters, such as East Palestine, Ohio's energy environmental emergency, or the opioid crisis in rural Appalachia. What they see as black and white crime, you see. Because they, these guys, you know, these NJP guys, they don't know the difference between blacks and whites. And so, you know, whenever it is, like, there's a crime happens, and they think, like, oh, yeah, well, you know, there's a black perpetrator. And he shot a bunch of people while, you know, like screaming white at them. And, you know, that's what they see as black and white crime. We understand over here at Truth Out, you know, we understand in our bomb-throwing communist organization that that's not really black and white crime. It's reparations, you see. That's, they told you about that. If somebody loots a Gucci, that's reparations. You see what I'm saying? They're wiser over there. They understand that when nigger criminals run around shooting at people, it's, you know, it's reparations. This is a fundamentally different theory of change than that found among those who only want to publish articles or make podcasts, as the latter was built around the notion that changing minds through propaganda was the most effective route to eventually changing their political reality. Now, I don't know that there's actually such a huge disconnect between those two things, as a matter of fact. If you want to get people out into the street, if you want to go and have in real life activism, it's not like you're going to do that without propaganda, right? It's not like you're going to do that without blog posts and videos and shit, right? The idea that these two things are separate is fucking preposterous. And the people who say that, and there's people on our side who say that, Sven amongst them. And frankly, like, I think that that's a really stupid goddamn idea. I think that that dumb idea is responsible for probably more of our problems than a lot of people realize. That's a bifurcation made by people like Andrew Anglin, who would not dare to show their face in public, right? No, guys, don't do stuff in public. Don't show up in real life. I'm not able to do that. If you guys start doing in real life stuff, then I'm going to quickly get pushed aside, and I can't allow that to happen. So I'm going to sabotage all of your in-person operations and make sure that anybody who can show their face in public is slandered and destroyed, you see. All of the stupid, anonymous little fucking faggots who run around these circles and tell everybody that they're not edgy enough, those fucking people love that shit, right? No, 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 Goy. If you guys start showing up in public, oh, the Jews are going to get you. You can't do that. You've got to keep on doing this on the internet where I can do this without having a face. We've got to do this on the internet where I can operate 10 different accounts and pretend that I'm the voice of 10 different people and actually have influence. Because if you show up in person, well, I'm not going to be able to do that. And everybody's going to realize that I'm a fucking kike and I'm ruining everything that you do. Part of what broke up the NJP was their leadership's attempts to torpedo any competing voices, subsequently eliminating any chance of collaboration. Nick Fuentes, the leader of the white nationalist Groyper movement, which maintains a large foothold among young national conservatives, is a divisive figure of the white nationalist movement. Many within the NJP, particularly their leader and popular podcast host Eric Stryker, have voiced criticism of Fuentes for his Christian nationalism, an ideology they believe deprioritizes what they view as the primacy of race. Stryker also went after emerging stars of the movement like Keith Woods, Richard Spencer's former podcast co-host and popular YouTuber who is credited with starting the Ban the ADL campaign that Elon Musk gave extraordinary publicity to. In general, the NJP's leadership followed much of the post-alt-right in making enemies of all their former comrades, denouncing everyone from Richard Spencer to the street fascist group Patriot Front. Now, that's particularly more poignant. Now, I think that, you know, obviously in politics, I famously wrote something when I was with the Libertarians. Said, libertarian infighting is a good thing. Published another one, said the government doesn't want you divided. I've written over the years a lot of things about the benefits and positive aspects of political infighting, okay? So don't mistake what I'm about to say for a blanket condemnation of infighting. I think it was pretty funny. There was like a TRS bit. They had a skit that they did. Infight Club, right? I wish I had it handy to play because it was pretty fucking funny. If this is your first night at Infight Club, you have to infight. The first rule of Infight Club is do not talk about Infight Club, whatever the fuck it was. And so, for example, you know, the Nick Fuentes thing, you know, how much attention do you want to call to that stupid little shit? I don't know, but he's obviously a bad actor, and if you got to call him out sometimes, fine. Andrew Anglin, obviously a bad actor. You got to call him out once in a while, you got to do it, whatever. But why would you be in a conflict with Patriot Front? What the fuck is Patriot Front doing to you, right? Patriot Front doesn't do anything to anybody at all. Patriot Front, like, you know, like organizers, they show up, they make some noise, they go away. They go put up some flyers. Every once in a while, one of them gets in trouble and everybody's pretty good about it. Why does anybody need to be in a conflict with Keith Woods? I'm a little annoyed with the guy, frankly. Like, I sent him an email. I said, hey, you're making a lot of noise. I'd love to have you on my show. The guy didn't answer me. I never said anything about it in public because whatever, you're doing good work. Fine, do your thing. That's trying to take out your competitors is what it is. And that's fucking stupid. You know what I'm saying? That's fucking dumb in politics. It's one thing to do that in business. It's a completely different thing to do politically. Nothing happens in politics without an alignment of diverse interests. You have to build coalitions, not fucking isolate yourself, right? It's just plain common sense. And that's not particularly unique to, like, you know, people are like, oh, well, democracy sucks, so we should break all the rules of democracy. And I'm like, well, yeah, democracy sucks, but, you know, unless you're going to, you know, violently overthrow the government, then actually democracy is the way that you're going to gain power. So you might want to learn how to operate within that framework, or you're going to have to build a military, in which case you're going to have to build an even stronger coalition than you would have had to win the fucking election, dumbass, right? The amount of energy that you require to violently overthrow the government of the United States and the amount of election, the amount of energy that you need to win elections, I don't know that they're actually that far apart from one another. Excuse me. The key strategic conflict is between Enoch's vision of continued white advocacy, which involves street activism and intends to intervene on real political issues, and Sven's, who believes his parody songs and podcasts, known as Metapolitics, or the politics of building consciousness through culture and education. As the blowback from the lethal Unite the Right rally in 2017 continued, a rally that left one anti-fascist protester dead and dozens seriously injured, and many of the leading alt-right figures faced personal and professional consequences, institutions like Richard Spencer's National Policy Institute and Radix Magazine and publishers like Countercurrents have returned to their focus on building community through metapolitics, largely through online and in-person conversations and lectures. The NJP-TRS merger intended to meld both media content and public activism, but this created serious problems when their rhetoric attracted the wrong kind of attention. It could lead to law enforcement investigations that could ultimately collapse the entire network as well as anti-fascist responses. Now, that's a bunch of fucking horseshit. The biggest problem that you have about law enforcement in the alt-right is stupid fucking little shits within it who are running around playing spot the Fed, right? It's not a criminal organization. Stop behaving like one, you fucking retard. You're a fucking moron. Stop it. Okay, fine. There's cops involved. Don't commit crimes, asshole. How about that? Don't break the fucking law. Understand that you're a political organization. You're going to be under government scrutiny. And don't consider it controversial if there's fucking FBI around. Just get fucking used to it, asshole. These fucking stupid little fucks who go around saying, oh, Fed. It's these fucking people. It's the people who write articles like this saying that. They're not your friends. You're involved in politics. The government's going to watch what you do. Get used to the fucking idea. What the fuck is wrong with you? The whole entire fucking point is for you to be... The whole entire fucking point is for the government to take an interest in you. You're trying to become the institution, for Christ's sake. Being crippled by that type of shit is like, it's toxic, which is why these people always play it up, right? It could lead to law enforcement investigations. What? Yeah. Well, that's, yeah. Like, of course you're going to be investigated. You're a fucking political organization. What the fuck did you think was going to happen? The NJP built on the model of the earlier traditionalist worker party. Well, wait, before I go on to that. Melding the two things is actually not a bad idea, okay? The problem is responding to the business incentives in the political organization, okay? So when Eric Stryker's attacking fucking Patriot Front, what is he doing? Is he telling you that Patriot Front's a bunch of bad guys? No. What he's doing is he's saying, those are our competitors. Fuck you, competitor, right? Well, that's not politics. It's fucking stupid. That's hostile to your own political interest. There was nothing to be gained by doing that. The NJP built on the model of the earlier traditionalist worker party, the National Socialist Political Party created by Matthew Heimbach and his former father-in-law, Matt Parrott. After an incident colloquially called online the Night of Wrong Wives, the party collapsed and scattered. Much of the NJP's leadership ended up being composed of former TWP cadre, while Heimbach created his own alternative vehicle called the Patriotic Socialist Front, melding ethnic nationalism with authoritarian Marxism and patriotic Stalinism. The great fucking idea right there. This leadership included former TWP leader Tony Hovener, who became famous in 2017 when the New York Times published a friendly feature on him, acting as chief of staff of the NJP. Hovener was later accused of financial mismanagement through Enoch's attorney, and their social media subsequently devolved into pointing fingers and releasing private information of their former members. Now, that didn't happen. That's fake, okay? They, you know, there was the amount of information that was posted about the leadership was actually not even really private, okay? Like, Hovener posted some shit about salaries, which is totally uncontroversial. But because, you know, because of the anonymous element in this movement, the people who write articles like this, they get to sow chaos, as the guy said, is the whole entire point of the piece. So Hovener says that some guy makes $5,000 a month, and then like 10 social media accounts are like, oh, they're ripping us off. Do you have any idea, like, what if you have a competent person working for your political interests for $5,000 a month, what a gift that person's giving to you? It's completely absurd that you think that's actually, like, a controversial thing. They're trying to make they're spinning this narrative that member information was leaked, right? Well, that has never happened, okay? There's not a membership database. They're going to go into this in a few minutes. That never happened. This is them sabotaging. This is what the guy said. To infiltrate and sow chaos is the purpose of the enterprise for them. And that's exactly what they've done. They did it through. They do it in everything that we do. And the reason that they can do that is because we tolerate the anonymous nonsense, okay? According to a leaked August 10, 2023 email message to former NJP leader Tony Hovater from Director of Executive Affairs Valentino Ferrante, the party was receiving about $5,426 a month, an average of $62.95 per supporter, leading to a yearly budget in the hundreds of thousands. Now, there's some kind of fucking problem here. $5,426 a month is not a lot of money, and it certainly isn't hundreds of thousands of dollars a month. So, like, there's just bad math here. $5,426 a month times 12 is $65,112 a year. $65,112 a year. That's not hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. And I'm 100% certain that the NJP was making more money than that. So this guy's just, like, making up math. He's just making shit up. Hovater alleged numerous financial improprieties from leading NJP figures and staff, such as Mike Petovic using $50,000 for back surgery or embezzling around $200,000 in cryptocurrency, which is a standard method of payment from supporters, on top of making $6,000 per month in salary. So the entire party's making $5,426 a month, but Mike Enoch's taking $6,000. Well, there's some financial impropriety if I've ever heard of some. That's not what's going on. These people don't care about the accuracy. And by the way, this has been up for days. This has been up here the whole fucking time. And they've not gone back to try to issue a correction. After Hovater reportedly brought up some internal issues, Dunston said he pushed to fire Hovater, who he said was taking orders from an NJP member that was concealing their Jewish ancestry. So, you know, Mike Enoch is like the leader of the party or whatever. I forget the exact organizational structure, but, you know, if you're the leader of a political party and you make $6,000 a month in salary, that's not controversial, as a matter of fact. And if the party then pays for you to have back surgery, they understand on the left that, you know, an employer paying for the medical bills of their senior leadership, for fuck's sake, is actually not controversial. And what Tony Hovater did was completely fucking disreputable. And from where I sat, I was never a fan of the NJP. I think the whole entire idea was a bad idea. I think it was Eric Stryker's dumb fucking idea. And I don't like Eric Stryker. And I never have, not from the fucking day that I met him. But Tony Hovater goes in there, fucking takes over the Telegram channel. Like, you had an NDA with these guys. You guys were best fucking friends. You guys are like, you guys are, one day you're telling everybody that you guys are going to save the white race and that you're all on the same team and that this organization is yada, yada, yada. And then 15 minutes after there's a separation between the two of you, you're gone to the mattresses, right? Hovater takes over the fucking Telegram channel and decides, like, yeah, I'm just going to pretend that I'm these guys who I was, you know, held in high regard yesterday, and I'm going to discredit them, and I'm going to leak information about them. I'm going to take completely uncontroversial facts and paint them as a scandal using the social media channels of the company I used to work for. Well, whether the guy he's taking orders from is a Jew or not, you're behaving like one, that's for fucking sure. The NJP grew primarily using the podcast and the Right Stuff Network as a mutually reinforcing echo chamber. The NJP added real-world relevance to the podcast and helped them grow at times when they were removed from the most financial transaction systems, the search engine results, or social media platforms. For those invested in the Right Stuff, such as Enoch or Sven, the podcast subscribers are their source of income, so their participation in the party as subcultural celebrities was necessary to keep the dollars or Bitcoin coming in. Quote, from the very outset, Sven saw it as a distraction from his enterprises that detracted from those enterprises. It was designed so that the NJP would either grow big enough to push him out if it succeeded, or it would drag him down with it if it failed, wrote white nationalist Matt Parrott in a January 8th blog post, outlining the forces that he believes brought down the organization. Because the alt-right's behavior became so immediately toxic and anti-fascists would dox them rather quickly, they often had to go public and try to turn their movement work into a career. When that transition took place, the calculations became different and blended the world of fascist personalities and street activism and created a contradiction in the kinds of behaviors that built their celebrities and those that can build movements. Now, it's true enough that when a guy gets doxxed, you know, he's a lot of times he loses his jobs because, you know, because the people who write articles like this, the bomb-throwing anti-capitalists that you see, they're actually supported and propped up and made possible by the wealthiest people and largest corporations in the country, right? So they're a big fucking scam. They're fake, right? And that's obvious if you listen to the show. First things first. So when they go out and they name somebody's name, the corporations that they pretend that they're not on the side of, they turn around and make life impossible for their political opponents who are actually the ones fighting against the powers that be. You know that if you listen to the show. And so, yeah, when that happens, there, you know, it creates some financial pressures. But there's, you know, a person is not without options when this occurs. Guys go and they try to make their living as activists and media personalities, and there's actually nothing wrong with that. I'm one of the first people to encourage people to do that in the movement, right? There's nothing wrong with it. But it's a real thing that, like, when you do that and your income is tied up in it, it creates incentives, right? Like, you have difficult decisions to make at that point. Among them is, like, okay, are you going to do, you know, you have to do things that are not going to improve your financial status, right? Like, you have to do things that are unpopular, and you have to weather storms and stuff like that, okay? This is why most people, you know, people who run for office at a high level, they're usually rich people, because, like, you have to be able to take losses in the course of that. And so, like, if you're in a situation where you've just lost your job, and now you're trying to, like, you know, derive an income from doing something controversial and dangerous, you're actually not very well suited to that, as a matter of fact. You don't possess, first of all, you probably don't possess the skills necessary to do it, right? Unless you were doing that prior, as was your humble correspondent, like, you're not in a position to do that at all. I have been a professional media producer for over a decade. I was a professional media producer for years before I ever heard of the alt-right. I was doing that as a controversial figure within the libertarian movement, where, like, people in the libertarian movement were always, you know, running around trying to destroy me. The government didn't give a fuck, obviously, because we were libertarians. What are we going to do? But the libertarians themselves were always running around trying to destroy me. I got used to, like, the, you know, weathering those storms, right? When guys are like, yeah, I'm a podcaster and I go to work 7 days, 5 days a week. And then they're like, oh, I lost, you know, the job. So I'm just going to have to go all in on the podcasting. And by the way, I've got, you know, a family to feed. I got to make sure that everybody has their health insurance paid. Well, like, actually, it's probably not going to work, as a matter of fact. The online rhetoric of the alt-right was largely honed on the Right Stuff podcast, which brought open racial slurs back into vogue among white nationalists who had, for a time, tried to use more moderate language to appeal to mainstream conservatives, and thinly hinted at extreme levels of violence, including articles that justified the genocide of non-white people and Jews. What do you mean, non-white people and Jews? You mean non-white people including Jews, right? Oh, that's right. You're trying to pretend the Jews are white because you're a liar and a terrorist. This gave the movement much of its energy. What Richard Spencer said in a 2016 interview was the Dionysian energy that was important for drumming up interest. But when that translates to real-world activity, it brings the attention of police and ensures that they will never break into the conservative base of Republican voters. So far, there has seemed to be little attention paid to the National Justice Party by the police, though research has shown that they held significant overlapping memberships with groups like Patriot Front, which have faced extensive police attention, as well as those involved in earlier acts of violence, such as the 2017 Unite the Right rally. They keep on invoking the Unite the Right rally. You listen to this show, you know all about that, so I'm not going to bother harping on it a great deal. But the fucking, the cowardly running away from that event, everybody's attempt to fucking put that behind them and be like, oh, well, I'm going to downplay my fucking role in that. That was a bunch of bullshit, and we suffered tremendously for it, right? And the people who ran away from that, right, they gained nothing. Okay. The people who are like, okay, guys, in order for the movement to succeed, we've all got to just, you know, throw the whole Unite the Right thing under the bus. You guys lost. We're the winners. We're going to go and we're going to carry this thing into the future. Yeah, well, that didn't work, did it? As a matter of fact. That fucking event, as fucked up as it was, and as fucking fucked up as the cast of cartoon characters turned out to be who put it together, was like the thing, okay? That was what was needed to, if you took that fucking narrative back, you know, you changed the whole country. And everybody was like, no, just sweep it under the carpet. Just whoever's going to get their losses from that, just go take it. Fucking cowards. And now it's their win, right? You let them win, and then they're like, yeah, we're going to kick your ass. You let us win. That's how it works. The alt-right always struggled to form, to move from the world of online pseudo-intellectualism into real-world pseudo-intellectualism. I'm kidding. That's not what they say here. The alt-right always struggled to move from the world of online pseudo-intellectualism into real-world activism. That's what they're saying here. I'm joking about the real-world anti-intellectual pseudo-intellectualism because that's what these two people do. They're like, no. You see, we go on college campuses with our pseudo-intellectualism and we get paid by the taxpayer to spread our nonsense, you see. That's what you should aspire to do, right-winger. For example, Identity Europa, despite growing rapidly after its formation in 2016, was unable to sustain an offline presence and was often relegated to private conference, anonymous sticker campaigns, and eventually collapsed under a sequence of failed leaders. A number of groups followed, such as the American Identity Movement and Vanguard America, none of which were able to formulate a successful public strategy, which is the assumed prerogative of any community organizing operation. Now, projects like Countercurrents and Richard Spencer's newly rebranded Alexandria have retreated back into their insular world of publishing, reading groups, and endless Zoom calls. NJP intended to retain the same vision that hit its zenith at Unite the Right, but in doing so never built out a stable coalition. Instead, they saw the rest of the movement as competitors, assuring division remained, and took principled stands on every issue of little importance. And that is very well fucking put. Every once in a while, these fucking people stumble upon something worthwhile, and that's it right there. You know, whatever fucking, you know, Identity Europa was a pretty successful organization. Unite the Right fucking, you know, sends everybody scattering. And, you know, figurehead after figurehead comes and goes, and then there's no more Identity Europa. They call it the, you know, then there's something that essentially takes the place of Identity Europa. Say, a lot of the same names and faces come into something called the American Identity Movement, and most of you probably haven't even heard of the organization because it never went anywhere. Countercurrents and Richard Spencer's newly branded Alexandria have retreated back into their insular world of publishing, reading groups, and endless Zoom calls. And so, like, well, there's nothing wrong with Countercurrents or Richard Spencer, you know, having a publishing outfit or whatever. There's nothing wrong with producing content. What the problem becomes that they are, when they start protecting their position, right? They're like, oh, no, what the idea that you create, the idea that there's an either or strategy here where, oh, no, 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 you guys in the street stuff, you guys are dumb. You should be online producing entertainment media. Anybody who tries to tell you that there's a that like there's a tension between those two things is a fucking shithead who's trying to like who's covering his own fucking ass, and it's disreputable to do. And it happens all the fucking time. No, 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 Goy, don't go out in the street. I can't participate in that. My way that keeps me safe and out of trouble is the way things ought to be done, you see. Well, no. As a matter of fact, shut the fuck up, pussy, okay? If you don't want to go get your fucking hands dirty, then fucking don't. Just stop telling other people what to do. If you're a fucking coward, stay home, be a fucking coward. We understand. It's scary. Whatever. Not everybody can be a fucking man. I don't know what to tell you. So who takes up the fucking thing? That's the obvious take, which is you're both. You're a media outlet. You go and you fucking show up once in a while, for fuck's sake. What? Who takes that up? The podcast outfit that turned its fucking podcast fan club into a political party. And told everybody, and then started attacking all the other fucking people that they saw as competitors. To make absolutely certain that they couldn't even form coalitions in their own fucking thing, much less with the Republican Party and conservatives, and all the people that they need to make fucking coalitions with to actually wield power. It's the most predictable fucking thing in the world. If you're a white nationalist group and you're like, oh no, Patriot Front, these guys, blah. Oh my God, you are saying positive things about the Republican Party and right-wing politics? You must be some kind of cock working for the fucking Jews. I wonder how we're going to win the election, fellas. Fuck you, you stupid motherfucker. It's the most obvious fucking thing in the world. The NJP's implosion was the result of the contradiction implicit in the coalition it was trying to form. To become an influential street force with the potential to play a role in local elections, it needed the kind of big tent community that the alt-right branding had once created. But that temporary alliance, which was forged in the racist optimism that early Trumpism created among white nationalists, had largely been destroyed by 2019 due to a combination of their ineptitude on display at events like Unite the Right and by effective work of anti-fascists. And what they mean by effective work of anti-fascists was the violent criminal fucking behavior that turned the whole fucking country upside down with the help of the FBI. And probably the SBU. When the intelligence agencies started helping criminals, shockingly enough, the people who were trying to be the good guys had a rough go of it, right? But that's what happened with the alt-right, and what all these stupid fucking people who I'm so sick of, I can't wait to get the fuck away from it, refuse to acknowledge is that what happened in 2016 was everybody got together around Donald Trump. And now you've got a bunch of fucking stupid, egotistical faggots running around trying to say, oh, no, I'm so much cooler than Donald Trump. Oh, I'm getting off the Trump train. If you're on the Trump train, you're a fucking loser. What do you think? Is this 2016? Well, fuck you, stupid fuck. What happened was everybody came together around the same thing. That put you into the Republican Party. That put the Republican Party in touch with you. That was your connection to the rest of the fucking country. And because you have a narrow, stupid little fucking niche interest, you throw that away. You burn that. You make absolutely certain you have no inroads to anything, and then you attack the fucking people in your own fucking thing on top of it. Yeah, great fucking strategy if what your goal is to fucking take, you know, 10, 20 fucking bucks a month from away from fucking 2,000-3,000 people. Congratulations. If you want to control the government of the United States, you're going to have to think bigger than that. You have to swallow your fucking ego, stupid motherfucker. What was left in the circle around the NJP was forged either in the remnants of earlier organizations that built their base primarily among neo-Nazi activists or secondarily racist podcast fans who had less of an investment or experience in the world of street actions. While the rhetoric of TDS may sound like it lines up with the ultimate aims of defectors from the National Socialist Movement, these are largely separate communities that failed to gel in any way that is necessary to sustain a coordinated project. The reason that the TWP had legs in its mid-2010 incarnation was that it intentionally recruited from among a working-class middle American base. But the core of the right stuff were middle-class online lurkers, so positioning that crowd to take up the model honed by Heimbach and his street stormers was destined to fail. Secondarily, those whose politics are developed in an anonymous world of trolling and hyperbolic podcasts have trouble transitioning to real-time or IRL activism because their physical presence forces them to take responsibility for their rhetoric. Which is so true. When you have these, you know, the edge right, these stupid little fucking online bot accounts who are running around calling fucking people names and trying to drag everything into the fucking gutter all of the time. You know, I read Bill Marchant's Don't Punch Right for his audiobook from his blog Northern Reaction. And, you know, Don't Punch Right was a worthwhile concept that required refinement. And one of the things that Bill Marchant said in the Don't Punch Right essay was, you know, how much does what's the difference? How much slack do you cut a real-world activist versus some anonymous online account? That was in the Don't Punch Right essay that was so influential. He says, I don't know, that's something that needs some thought. Well, it never got any thought, did it? Nobody ever actually figured that the fuck out. So you have these fucking stupid asshole bull patrol types who are like, no, the entire ethical foundation of our movement is you don't dox me. No matter what I do, no matter what crimes I commit, no matter how much trouble I cause you, no matter how much money I cost you, no matter how toxic I am to our cause, Doxing is completely out of the question, and anybody who dares to pierce the veil is a disreputable character and has to be cut out of the entire thing. Well, no, fuck you, as a matter of fact. I think that you should be held accountable for what you say, fuck you. And if you're fucking afraid of it, then go be a fucking pussy somewhere else and do some other fucking thing. Don't bother me. Secondarily, those whose politics are developed in the online world of trolling and hyperbolic podcasts are troubled transitioning to real world or IRL activism because their physical presence forces them to take responsibility for their rhetoric. While it may be easy enough to say the most extreme sounding things possible on a subscriber only podcast feed, it is much different when you have to be legally liable for your community organizing choices if you want to reach beyond your base for new recruits. If participants engage in illegal and violent activity and then were to be traced back to their organization, those leading the organization, such as Enoch, could face criminal charges or civil penalties, and with the demonstrated lack of composure by the white nationalists in their community, it's more than possible that their near-genocidal podcast rhetoric could lead to real-world acts of terror. That's a real thing, as a matter of fact. Now, you know, these people play up the potential for violence in our cause, but, like, you know, it's an observable phenomenon, so fucking take some fucking responsibility and stop blaming the other side, right? It's your realpolitik here is that if you're associated with the violence, you're going to have a fucking problem, so you need to fix the problem, okay? And denying the existence of it is actually not a way to do that. Oh, but we need people to just say what needs to be said. Yeah, I get it. Okay, I said that a million fucking times myself. Whatever. And how much fucking use is it? You can't get off of the computer because you've shown a lack of restraint, which is not a right wing value. Okay, like you need to be able to compose yourself and fucking like be polite and stuff. And if you can't figure that out, then you're never going to get anywhere in politics, and you're just going to have to, you can go do whatever it is you're going to do, but you're doing something other than politics. And so, like, anybody who wants to save the country from the government is going to have to pull it the fuck together and moderate their speech. There's no two ways about it. And if you want to be the guy who's doing something other than politics, fine. Fine. But stop attacking the people who are trying to solve the fucking problems of the country, for Christ's sake. Parties like the NJP have a long track record, not only of helping to effectively build white nationalism, but for also becoming vectors of racist violence. However, they also have an inherent vulnerability in the fact that they absorb members of a rather disparate movement and place them onto membership lists and leave financial trails that anti-fascists can use to identify fascists and create campaigns to subsequently destroy the organization. This is a complete fucking fiction, okay? There's not membership lists. There's nothing, and this is all a bunch of propaganda, okay? And they haven't, and any time that anything of the sort has existed, they haven't gotten access to it, okay? They know that white nationalists read these things, okay? And so they're like, yeah, let's go sow dissent to make sure that nobody pays for anything, because if we can disrupt their commerce, then, you know. And I'm just going to stop there, because that's most of what they close out with, okay? Let's go look at our streams, stream chats. This is just, yeah. Let me get rid of this fucking retard. You talk about, like, you know, anonymous people come try to ruin everything. So I'm over. I go look at the chat over on Goyim TV. If you let Christians run it, then the Jews take over exactly like they did. Christians are Jewish workers. Christians defile the teachings of Jesus. So I'm just going to go ban this guy from my fucking Goyim TV chat. Fuck you, faggot. Assmaster 33, I like your show, man. Like Limbaugh, but racist. $5. Nice guy nationalist. $5. A squandering of the spotlight, which was laid squarely on us post-Sevel, was truly a tragedy. $14.33 from Libertariat. Great to see fired up Chris back. The damage these people did is tragic. Yeah, it is. And so, I'm just going to stop here. I'm just going to call it a fucking night. What am I going to say about the fucking Jews fucking attacking Iran? We've been watching that happen for a fucking, you know, for as long as I've been alive. They've been trying to pull that off. They're about to do it. So World War III's upon us, whatever. I made $25 tonight. That's what you expect in a world that's gone completely to shit. Thank you very much for the people who gave me that $25. I'm very grateful to you. This is why the show is ending, okay? It's over. It's done. Thank you very much for tuning into The Radical Agenda. Have yourselves a wonderful evening and good night. What the fuck is going on here?
That's it. It's over. Then we organize the death squads for the people who wrecked America.
You know what you call people you can't talk to? Enemies. And if we want to divide our society into armed camps of enmity, all we have to do is keep doing what we're doing.
A radical agenda. The event has turned into an opportunity for the left to push a racial and radical agenda.
Implementing their radical agenda is the only thing they care about. They're bad actors.
What they want to do here is ram their radical agenda down your throat.
These are great Americans. These are people that want to see great things for the country. You know, they try and build them like, it's not a radical, it's the second.